Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Tieko Sforze. Tieko, how are you doing? How is fair Limpopo today?
Good things, and how are you? Limpopo is quite mild, pretty mild weather-wise. How's June back that side?
It's a very typical autumn day. It's that slow slide into winter. And of course, we are also joined by Ms. Sarah Gaughan. Sarah, how are you?
I'm well. I'm sitting in the slow slide of to winter, but the middle of the day is lovely. It's very mild, so I'm cool.
Indeed. We were a little bit late for those of you watching live because I believe, sorry, your power tripped. I don't know if we...
Well, I at least had power to trip, if you get my drift.
Yes. No, I must say the load shedding recently has been very strange because it's sort of every time as I'm about to be load shedded, like that minute, it gets suspended. So I've been rather pleased by that. But anyway,
Okay.
Let's get into today's news stories. And we're going to start off with an old friend that we used to talk about a lot on the show, particularly in 2019, 2020. And this is SAA. So SAA has had quite a few problems recently. I heard recently that the person who was in charge of the flight to pick up vaccines in Europe during the pandemic, and that flight had an enormous number of technical problems, and the crew almost ran into some issues there. The guy in charge of that flight that had all those problems has been appointed SAA's training director, so that's not great. But anyway, on the business side, SAA has been kind of sort of limping along in sort of kind of business rescue, and there's been this deal that has been negotiated behind closed doors between government and a group called the Takatso Consortium, who I believe lease local jets, and they're also a private equity firm. Anyway, it's been very secretive, and government said, no, we've got this deal with the Takatso Consortium's going to own 51% of SAA, and the government's going to own 49%, we're going to own 51%, and this is going to be all great, and it's going to save the SAA. Well, apparently the deal has finally been signed. However, it still all seems a bit sort of lacking on details. However, according to Bloomberg, part of the agreement says that the Takatso Consortium has the ability to assess whether there are any ongoing liabilities in SAA to be settled by the government. In other words, they can say, hey, this is a thing that we're not going to be responsible for paying for. The government needs to cover the costs of it. And that means that SAA's bailouts may continue in some sense, even after it's been bought by a private company. Apparently, Treasury is very unhappy about this. And Sarah, what do you make of all this?
If I were to cut, so I mean, that's exactly the sort of provision I would include in an agreement and really push for, because of course, they've got the majority shareholding, so they're going to run the airline and hopefully do something with it. But no decent private sector group of businessmen is going to go into a deal with an entity like SAA and not cover their rears because there's suddenly liabilities that arise from SAA prior the signing of the agreement. So it's on the one hand, it's exactly what I think any good businessman should do. On the other hand, as you say, for amounts we don't yet know, we may still be on the hook, and very likely would be because SAA has been in such an appalling condition that it's only natural that. That there's gonna this stuff's gonna come up, and we're gonna have to cover it, while all the other state-owned entities and public hospitals, etc., continue to hemorrhage money and by all accounts copper cable.
No, exactly. Tieko, so there's two questions I have for you. One is, firstly, why do you think government is just so attached to keeping some form of SAA going? I'm thinking of a country like India. Now, India's got a lot of problems, but when it came to its national carrier that was bankrupt, it said, look, if we don't find a buyer for this thing that's going to just take it over completely and do its own thing with it, we're just going to take it apart and dismantle it because it's costing us too much money and it's a waste of time. Why is government so intent on keeping it alive? And secondly, what could we rather be doing with this money?
Well, I think the company is probably being sold to friends of politicians. And that's why it's important that they do keep the company going on and that government does continue to fund the company. But I must say that it doesn't make logical sense that the whole point that we are selling SAA is because it was costing us a lot as a country, it was costing us a lot as citizens. It doesn't make sense, logical sense, that we then sell the company and still continue allowing the company to have those cost implications on us as ordinary citizens and the government of the country. Secondly, I think there's something to be said, right, about our politicians and their simple understanding of economics and how an economy should function. And the mere fact that they don't understand that in such a transaction, you really want to get rid of this thing, like India did, as you mentioned, you want to get rid of this thing entirely and ensure that it doesn't have any costs for you ongoing costs for you. You'd rather even remain with those costs that existed before you dismantle the whole thing, but it doesn't make any logical sense to carry on funding such a thing, I must say.
And, you know, just as this news has come out that we might still be on the hook for some liabilities in SAA, I saw there was an announcement by Health Minister Joe Pachla saying that the health ministry's budget, he reckons, is going to decrease by, in effect, around 2% a year, just because government doesn't have money to spend on this stuff. Sara, any final thoughts on this?
Perhaps a couple of things. The one is that part of the problem with the ongoing liability scenario is that government guaranteed SAA's debts. So, and long as SAA exists and as long as their debts that emanate from the sale, we're going to be on the hook for them. That's the one problem. Why they feel they need to keep an airline? Well, in their favor, I suspect it's not about greasing anyone's palms and providing incomes for cadres anymore because it's in such a dire strait. But there seems to be an inverse relationship between the desire to have a flagship airline and the state of the economy of the country that wants the airline. So if you can't have an economy, you may as well have a fancy schmancy looking airline.
Yeah, no, it very much smacks of vanity project, but we've seen quite a lot of that from government. I mean, yesterday we were talking about a flagpole for 22 million rand, which is just, I still find it really funny. Anyway, okay, let's move on to our next story. And Dirko, you said the story to me. It comes from the Herald in the Eastern Cape, where apparently the ANC there is in as much of a financial state as it is in the rest of the country. The ANC's provincial office there is struggling to raise funds and pay its staff. But it's come up with an ingenious solution, which is to make ANC staff political appointees in the staff of government officials. And in doing so, it's managed to reduce its salary bill from 19.7 million to 17.1 million over the course of about 4 years. So this is according to the former treasurer, Babalo Madikizela, who presented a financial report for the last 5 years, which apparently has been seen by the Herald newspaper, which said that the ANC in the province is really struggling to raise funds. They used to be able to raise about 36 million rand in 2018, and that's now down to 19 million rand in 2021. And so not only is it been trying to shift over the cost of some of its party employees over to the state, but apparently it is also trying to raise money from its deployees, and it has asked all of its deployees to contribute back to the party. So in this case, I guess how it would work is you get deployed to a position by the ANC in government, and then you're supposed to sign a debit order which gives money back to the party between 250 and 1,000 rand every month. In an interview on Monday, the former treasurer, Madikizela, said that the strategy to absorb the staff into political posts in government did not affect the government's wage bill which currently amounts for about two-thirds of all spending in the Eastern Cape's provincial government. As the appointment of political staff was well regulated, he says, there will be political deployees, but it is a matter of how these posts could be better used. Political officers are not like normal office workers with stringent hours. They need people with skills. When and where they are needed, then we can release them. Political deployees do not count as part of the bloated staff in government because they are contracted workers who, for instance, leave with me should I do so. Tieko, this really seems like trying to, you know, tell us that the sky is purple.
Absolutely. I think part of the problem with the ANC is that they tend to think that they own the government, right? And that they can do whatever they'd like to do in government as they do in their own political party. But let me rest assure you, this move is not just about covering the workers' salaries. It's also about the upcoming ANC Congress. It's also about upcoming elections in 2024. Now, whenever elections are around the corner, be it elections within the organization or elections, national elections, local government elections, they always position themselves towards government money and giving tenders to their friends, giving tenders to ANC members so they can give back to the organization. We currently know that the ANC is broke. They obviously cannot afford the upcoming Congress that must take place in December. And this is part of the strategy of moving closer to our money and stealing it so they can fund the Congress in December and moving forward, fund their election machinery towards 2024 elections. There's no doubt in my mind that this is what's happening here.
Sarah, what do you make of this? I mean, it's kind of like, I think it shows, you know, as Tieko said, the ANC has this problem with disentangling party and government. It really does, I think, see them as the same thing. And that means that this explains why we have a bloated public wage bill, because the party, if the party ever tried to untangle those two things, its political base would collapse. What do you make of all this?
Well, shout out to the treasurer. He at least admitted that they have a bloated public service. And as far as I know, in Joburg, they've managed to get rid of the sort of employed political officers.
I think there may still be some. And that case was slightly different because they moved people from political positions to permanent civil.
Yeah, to keep them paid. Position.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think they sort of think they're the government. I think it's like the ANC says the ANC is the government. I think it's so ingrained. I mean, because obviously, you know, if the public service, if there's no provision for the employment of political officers in the provincial government service, then the ANC getting the province getting these people onto their payroll is fraud. I mean, it's just plain good old fashioned fraud. I don't know that I don't know whether political officers do anything for the ANC, let alone for the provincial government.
Apparently they're supposed to do both. Here. They're supposed to work for the provincial government and at the same time also
Party. Yeah, doing what exactly with what skills? One does have to wonder. But I think the problem is the ANC faces. I think it's running around a bit like a headless chicken, because with the conferences coming up this year, and there's going to be blood on the floor in the ANC conferences, because everyone's future may hang in the balance in 2024. So I think kind of anything to keep people sweet is essentially what's going on.
So Tieko, final thoughts from you. I guess, you know, my only thought is that we really are heading to a period where this doesn't seem very sustainable. The ANC's used money to kind of grease the system. It's built this big network of supporters and that money's running out. Do you think this is going to seriously hurt the party's chances going into it hurt its support in the civil service and society more broadly going into 2024?
No, I definitely think so. The only thing is that part of the problem we have in South Africa is that civil servants themselves in and their many numbers are corrupt and similar to the ANC, really. But I do think it's gone ahead their chances of winning in 2024, as far as it comes to people who really do care about South Africa and ensuring that we do save it. But I do think, yeah, the direction that we are heading in is not a good direction at all. It does seem like we are heading to a collapsing economy, a government that's going to collapse entirely. It will take each of us, each citizen, standing up and ensuring that we do hold government to account for us to save this country, I think.
No, that's exactly right.
Can I perhaps just add to that? And that is that the whole civil service must be in a real two-stunt, because there may be post-2024, there may be a shake-up. They are going to have to sort of really argue for their positions, and I suspect in some cases they'll be required to apply for their positions. But there's not very much they can do, so they do rely on the ANC to sort of try and keep them covered for as long as possible. And as Tiego says, you know, with what? Exactly.
Right, right. Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately, this is kind of a little bit of a loophole, because these political positions do exist in government. These are people who are meant to, you know, like your kind of media staff and people like that who work specifically for the politicians, for a political party. They have a political bent. They're not supposed to be neutral like normal civil servants. And so in theory, you can kind of put party political people in there. But normally, it should be up to the voters to see this happening and punish the government for it. And as you say, Tiego, you know, people need to stand up and actually hold government to account for this. And, you know, we're seeing that increasingly. But I think in the Eastern Cape, it may take a bit longer than the rest of the country, unfortunately, because the ANC, as we have seen in recent by-elections, remains rather strong there. I don't know. Do you have anything final to say on that, Tiego, or should we move on?
We should move on, please.
Okay, cool. All right. So speaking of transport, we spoke about transport a little bit earlier, and SAA and the great bloated boondoggle that that is. But, you know, most people in the country get around using our minibus taxis. And government, of course, knows this, and it has plans now to formalize the taxi industry. Now, of course, it's been planned to do this for a very long time. But part of that formalization is a plan to subsidize taxis to ensure that they are up to a certain standard, I think. So according to Fikile Mbalula, he said, the transport minister Fikile Mbalula, we remain on track to achieve formalization of the industry, both in terms of entrenching democratic practice from association level to the National Council and in terms of commercial activity. We can no longer afford protracted conversations, but should have singular focus on implementation. The key commitments we have made in this regard is to enable partial self-regulation, where SANCTO, which is the South African National Taxi Council, plays a key role as a custodian of the standard constitution and code of conduct with a mandate to regulate conduct of members and associations. He also then went on to say that they're going to basically subsidize the taxi industry once it's properly formalized. So, Sara, let me start with you. Taxi is obviously very important in South Africa, but I don't know. There's something that to me in this that feels to me a lot like a payoff to create a sort of cartel.
Well, I think the taxi industry is absolutely vital. Historically, it has been, and it is no less so now. You know, we still have this apartheid spatial living situation conditions. That hasn't changed a lot, and no one is in a position to provide a proper transport service, as you know, you would perhaps expect in many parts of the rest of the world. So the taxi industry is crucial, and in being crucial, it's very powerful, and that's why it's managed to resist formalization for so long. I mean, any politician who's trying to do it has probably run the risk of having his head blown off. But the problem is that they now what they've wanted, and understandably so, because essentially they're a public sector transport industry, is to be subsidized, if not entirely, then at least in part. And this has been a sort of stasis where they've wanted to be subsidized, but they don't want to be regulated. And they seem to be moving in this period to something that is an accommodation. But the cynic in me again feels that it's probably likely that the country will pay. Our taxes will pay for the subsidization, although I'm not sure where the money is going to come from at this point. And the regulation, the self-regulation will be greater than they say it will be. And I think this is also, let's be honest, partly a problem because politicians, policemen, sort of government employees of one kind or another are in the industry and have their stake in the industry. As an ordinary citizen, I would love to see the taxi industry regulated in exchange for a subsidy. But I really don't think that the politicians have the power to impose the sort of regulation that we want, that the taxi industry is not unlikely to want to submit itself to. So I suspect either we're going to be had a bit on the financial side, or in fact, nothing's really going to eventuate.
So Teho, for me, it seems to me like the big problem with the taxi industry is just that the laws that we already have aren't really enforced, particularly when it comes to battling over routes. And every now and again, we see taxi drivers shooting at each other because they're competing over routes. And of course, everyone knows about unsafe practices in driving and stuff like that. And that's all contained within the rules of the road. So I don't really know how a subsidy is actually going to improve things that much for the taxi industry, apart from, making their personal financial situation better. But in terms of the experience of the people who are in the taxis and the people who share the roads with the taxis, I don't really see how this would help. It seems to me that they should just enforce the basic rules and, arrest people who are responsible for murdering each other for simply engaging in competition. Teho, what do you make of all this?
No, I agree with you entirely. The first question I asked myself when I read the article was, where is the money going to come from? And the second question, of course, was that every business operating in South Africa, or majority of businesses, are expected to pay taxes. Taxi drivers don't pay taxes. As a taxpayer, why should my money be used to subsidize someone who doesn't contribute even a cent to what the tax pocket? It doesn't make logical sense to me. I think what needs to happen is that government should allow the market to regulate itself. Part of the problem, part of why taxi drivers are not making as much money as they were making previously, is that we now have a growing e-hailing. We now have a growing e-hailing industry, right? You have Taxify, you have your Ubers and everyone operating within the market, resulting in lesser people using taxis and taxi drivers making less money. But part of an issue that has arisen as soon as that came along is that taxi drivers have been abusing your Taxify drivers, your Uber drivers, telling them that they can't make collections in areas such as the Gautrain station, taxi ranks and stuff. What must happen instead, if you were to ask me, is that the government must protect e-hailing, the e-hailing industry, and create an environment whereby taxi drivers can compete with these people. And if that means the taxi industry dies at the end of the day as a result of that, let it die. We really need to move forward, and competition is really what's going to take us forward.
So I do think that there is one way in which they do pay taxes, and that is, of course, on fuel. And I think we may have a bit of time to get to that right at the end here. So, if taxis are, I suspect that some of the reason they're asking for the subsidy is because they say that they can't make money now due to the massive increases in fuel price. Sara, any final thoughts?
I'd like to just pick up on Tiego's point about the market operating. There's a tendency with well-established industries in South Africa that when change happens or a disruption occurs, they don't adapt. And the appearance of the e-hailing taxi industry, both to old-fashioned style taxis and to the taxi industry, is just seen as a threat when the bosses should be saying, hang on, even, you know, create a part of that sort of industry within their industry, whatever's feasible or whatever makes the most sense. That's what the business sector does. So I'm inclined to agree on that, because the one advantage of keeping it private, other than the fact that it actually, you know, modernize and come up with new ideas, is it should make it, I mean, I'm being a bit theoretical here, but theoretically, it should make it easier for government to enforce the rules. There actually should be a rule that no one in government should be allowed to own a taxi, and if they do, they must be fired or something. I don't know, but it's exactly to keep that space between the private sector and government itself. But perhaps there will be proper regulation in exchange for the subsidies, but I suspect that'll happen until the next taxi war.
Right, and that's exactly the problem, is that our enforcement is our weak point. You know, we can make whatever rules we like, but at the end of the day, if things aren't enforced, it doesn't make a difference. I just want to add one last thing to this, which is that, you know, we do actually have some passenger rail in the country, and that has helped often very really? Poor people get from, well, we used to, is my point. We used to, you know, I know that from some of the outer areas of Joburg, you could get a train that could take you at least close to a taxi rank, and then you get a taxi to go out to the place. And this was something that was affordable to people who often had next to no money. But of course, because of enforcement problems, the rail infrastructure has been almost totally looted and destroyed. So
yeah, I don't think you can find the stations. You can probably just find the foundations.
No, exactly. Yeah. Tieko, any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Let's fix our trains industry, man. We need that industry to be functional. Exactly what you said. But in terms of taxis, I don't think we should. Personally, I don't think we should subsidize them. For the longest time, they've refused to be subsidized. They've refused to be regulated. Now that things are not going well for them, we must budge in and step up when they need us to step up, whereas we needed them to step up a long time ago. I don't think we should fall into that trap. Those are my final thoughts, really.
All right. Okay, so we've got a couple minutes left. So I just want to very quickly go over this one, and it is, of course, connected to the last one. And this is a story from the Central Energy Fund, the CEF, which plays a role in regulating the petrol price in South Africa, because, of course, we don't have a free market in petrol price here. It is set by government. We all know that there has been lots of increases to the petrol price recently, partly driven by local problems to do with refining, partly due to international problems to do with stuff going on in China and the war in Ukraine. But it now looks like things are about to get even worse for South Africans. There may be something like a three rand per litre petrol price increase. So the Central Energy Fund says that it thinks that there's going to be a rise of just under 2 rand per liter in the near future. But at the same time, and this is something we did praise government for, there was a tax relief of 1 rand 50 per liter given on the fuel levy. However, that looks like it's going to expire relatively soon. And so we may see the tax relief of 1 rand 50 expire just as about 2 rands worth of increases are happening, meaning that we're going to effectively end up paying 3 rand more for fuel. Sara, this is not a happy situation. What do you make of this?
Well, let's put it this way. You know those lovely interviews, every time there's a price hike in fuel, or they interview people who are filling up or going to, and you get these, I can't afford it, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, or swearing or worse. I think the next set of interviews that the television stations do with the average man in the street are going to probably be unprintable. If I don't know what the television equivalent of unprintable is, because of course it's a huge increase. It's a huge increase, and it's one is, you know, it affects every facet of our lives. I think the SAA is going to have trouble because it's can't buy any petrol at the moment because of the refineries. I think the other airlines, in fact, are flying down to Durban to get petrol, or fuel, to fly to London, so, you know, whatever it may be. So I think there is going to it's going to get very nasty because, you know, petrol, trucks, deliveries, cost of producing goods, the cost of, you know, all of that is going to go up, and it has to go up. It's going to be a real, it's really going to knock the inflation rate up.
Tiago, in 30 seconds, your thoughts.
I think we are going to see more people getting into debts. We are going to see more people losing jobs as a result of companies having more costs now and their profits being reduced. So it's really a crisis for us. It's a crisis for the nation. We should really, 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 really reduce taxes on petrol and remove all these unnecessary levies. Let private people pay for their own insurances that cover those things, just as other normal countries that understand how government should work are doing. Citizens should take that responsibility for themselves. We can't continue dying in this way. Really, as the left always say, we can't breathe at this point with this petrol price.
Well said, sir. Well said. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much, and we shall see you tomorrow on the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone.